There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Very good afternoon. Welcome along to our live broadcast down here at Barasti. You are listening to The Grill, day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. We are four matches down, just a small matter of 60 to go. We are currently watching France against Australia. Goals as and when they go in this opening match of day three over the course of the next 45 minutes or so. And then we'll be building up to game two. It is Argentina taking on Iceland. It is myself, Chris McCarty, joined by my usual partner in crime, Robbie Greenfield. Mark Archer alongside us as well over the course of the next 3 hours. Not just the FIFA World Cup though, there's an awful lot of sport to keep you bang up to date with. The Rugby Union Internationals ongoing at present is Australia against Ireland. We'll keep you bang up to date with that one. In the cricket, England against Australia. You may notice a little theme here. Over in the tennis, over in Germany, the Stuttgart Open. Roger Federer, yes, he's taking on an Aussie by the shape of Nick Kyrgios. And if all of that wasn't enough, we'll also be keeping you up to date with the second major of the year. It is the 118th US Open. It has been a bloodbath over at Shinnecock Hills. Only one man is under par. That is the world number one, Dustin Johnson. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Sergio Garcia and the great Tiger Woods all missing the cut. There's an awful lot to get through. It's going to be breathless stuff between now and 6 o'clock. But you are listening to The Grill. We are live on day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
I'm absolutely knackered already and we've still got work to be done. Let us introduce you then to my panel of intrepid reporters over the course of the next 3 hours. To my left sits my good friend, my partner in crime. It is Robbie Greenfield. A very good afternoon to you, my friends.
A very good afternoon, Chris. And I think the only surprise is that there's no Australian in the top 10 of the US Open at present because they seem to be dominating all other facets of the afternoon. Australia in action in the football, in the cricket and in the rugby. And of course, Nick Kyrgios taking on Roger Federer as well. What a tough match that's going to be for the returning Swiss. Former world number one trying to get his crown back from Rafa Nadal. It is an absolutely pulsating afternoon of sport. I am looking forward to it. It's not been a great first half, in all honesty. We're watching France taking on Australia over here in Kazan as we speak. It's a very hot day. The pitch looks a little bit sticky, Chris. But hopefully the match will liven up as this 45 minutes progresses.
Absolutely. That then, the voice of Robbie Greenfield. We will tell you what we have witnessed in the opening 51 minutes or so. We're going to be joined by a French fan. We're hoping as well to be joined by an Aussie fan who, of course, have made their way down here to Barasti. It is an incredible setting, I've got to say, and I don't want to be disrespectful. There's an awful lot of great settings around town. So many people turning out to watch the greatest show on earth. One man who bounded in about 10 minutes ago and he wasn't interested in the football. He was like, where is the rugby? Who's showing the rugby? Which screen can I find the rugby? It is the voice of Mark Archer. And Mark Archer, very good afternoon to you, my friend.
Evening, Chris, Robbie, and my good French friend, and Eid Mubarak to all the listeners. Yeah, finding a car park at Barasti is about as difficult as finding a TV screen showing the rugby union because it's absolutely jammed. The inside garden's jammed, the bar underneath jammed, the bubble tent on the beach.
Superdome
is absolutely packed. So if you are looking for somewhere to consume your sport today, particularly World Cup football, Barasti is as good as anywhere because there's a lot of people down here, a lot of colour, a lot of kids running around. It's absolute chaos, but it's a lot of fun down here at Barasti. All the action, as you said. Let me bring you bang up to date with a couple of the non-football scores. England taking on Australia, second one-day international in Cardiff. England off to a fast start, 108 for 1 after 17.3 of their 50 overs. Johnny Bairstow, the only man dismissed, for 42. Then live to Melbourne, where Australia taking on Ireland, second test match, rugby union. Half-time has just finished, they've just gone back out, and it's Ireland who lead the second test, 16 points to 14. Australia struck first through Kirtley Beale. They also had a penalty try. Conway the try for Ireland. Johnny Sexton's been in good form, conversion, three penalties. So just going into second half there in Melbourne. Ireland 16, Australia 14. I'll keep across the the rugby, I'll keep across the cricket, and I'll leave you boys to talk football.
Yeah, we certainly will be doing that. We will keep you across all the live sport. It isn't just the FIFA World Cup that is dominating the headlines. We'll keep you up to date, as Mark Archer early points out, with the rugby, with the cricket. We'll keep one eye on the tennis over in Germany as well. Roger Federer can go back to world number one at the grand old age of 36 if he is indeed victorious over Nick Kyrgios. That one getting underway 6 p.m. local time here in the UAE. But let us start where an awful lot of people will be focusing their attention on over the course of the next month. It is the FIFA World Cup. I think we've got to start, before we go back in time and look on across what has been a remarkable opening couple of days to a World Cup, let's start with this game if we can, Robbie Greenfield, because we are 53 minutes gone over in Kazan. You said it a few moments ago off air. It's probably been the poorest first half that we've seen thus far.
Yeah, it certainly has. It really has, Chris. And France just yet to fire, although things could be changing here.
It's a penalty. Is that a penalty? The referee has said play on. Surely the VAR comes in to existence at that point. That looked to me to be a penalty. We'll get an eye on that on a replay. But Antoine Griezmann scampering through. A beautiful through ball from Paul Pogba. Sent the Atletico Madrid man through. The referee has a waved play on. But sorry, Rob, going back to that point as we wait for the replay. The opening half was abject.
Look, it's been slow. It's been scrappy. Andrew Nabu, the lone front man for Australia, he's been ploughing a lonely furrow, a little bit like Mark Archer will be when talking about other sports on the grill this afternoon. He's only had four touches in that first half, has the Australian striker. I wonder whether they will be bringing on the veteran, Tim Cahill, to try and change things up at the front for them. But what of France? One of the pre-tournament favourites. And we're seeing at the moment, Chris, I'll break away, because I think something's going on here.
The VAR is in action. We are seeing the referee. He has taken to the sideline. The boys and the girls upstairs, the four VAR assistants, they're up in the control room. They're looking at a replay of that decision. Antoine Griezmann looked to me as if he was brought down. I thought penalty was my first instinct. We're having a look at it again here. Does the defender get a touch on that ball? I don't think he does. I think that's a penalty.
Question for the football experts here. Look, that play continued for at least a minute or two after the play. How can they not call a VAR decision straight away and review it? They let the game continue. Then the referee's been alerted to it. That makes the game a farce. You either stop it and review it, or you do other way.
And it's a penalty. It is a penalty. He has changed his original decision. We did say the VAR system would be a controversial one, and we're seeing the first instance of it in this 2018 FIFA World Cup. The referee has gone. He's consulted with the assistants up in the VAR control room. And Antoine Griezmann, it looks to me as if he will be handed the honour of taking this penalty. No doubt in my mind that is a penalty. The defender slides in, Griezmann is clear, and he clips his heels. That is a penalty all day long.
It is the faintest of touches, but it is a touch nonetheless. And wow, amazing, Arch, as you mentioned. The play continued, but VAR clearly wanted to investigate that. And amazingly, I was expecting all sorts of controversy to erupt from VAR. It's been used in the domestic football. It's been an absolute disaster for the first 6 months or so of this year. It's actually been very controversy-free for the opening 2 days, but that could be the first real talking point of video assistant referees.
Second question, why is that not a red card? He's the last player on goal.
They've changed the rules.
They've changed the rules?
They've changed the rules. If they're awarding a penalty, I might be mistaken here, but they wouldn't produce a red card at the same time.
No, I am aware of them changing the rules. He's a last man. I am with Arch in this. That should have been a red card. We saw it in the FA Cup final, though, didn't we? Phil Jones brought down Eden Hazard. He was only given a yellow, so perhaps they're being a little bit more lenient. But 56 minutes on the clock. Antoine Griezmann up against Matt Ryan, the Brighton and Hove Albion goalkeeper. It is a battle of minds, a battle of wills from 12 yards. Antoine Griezmann, the left footed Atletico Madrid striker, news this past week that he will be staying in the Spanish capital. There was a lot of speculation that he would head off to Barcelona, but it's Antoine Griezmann then with the opening chance to give France the lead in their opening match of the 2018 World Cup. There goes the whistle. Antoine Griezmann, he scores. Matt Ryan doesn't move. You hear the French fans behind us, and I tell you what, let's bring a French fan in now, because we've got a very patient French fan alongside us, Rob.
Yeah, a very frustrated French fan until this point. It is a good friend of mine. It is Arnaud Saran, a good and a proud Frenchman. Arnaud, great to have you with us on the show, and you're a happy man now because your team's in front.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, Robbie. Yeah, better. Easier to talk now than 10 minutes ago.
Good penalty that from Antoine Griezmann. Keeper was rooted to the spot and right into the corner. No saving that, even if he dived the right way. But from what you've seen so far, Arno, is this the spark that could finally get France and spark them into life? Because they've seemed sluggish. They've seemed like they're just not quite at the races thus far.
yeah, hopefully they get free now to play, because they've been playing with a handbrake all first half, and let's see if this first trio in the front plays better.
They're such an illustrious collection of talents, aren't they, France? You look at that front three, it is quite extraordinary. Kylian Mbappe, Antoine Griezmann, the penalty scorer, Ousmane Dembele, who's had an injury-interrupted season at Barcelona, but such a talent. They've got all the talent in the world, but you said to me just before we went on air, as France burst into the box again and potentially look to double their lead, and eventually the danger is past and Australia have retained the ball. But Arno, you were saying they're lacking a number 10. They're lacking a playmaker in that position who can make things happen for them further up the pitch.
They're lacking a Zizou. Is that what you're telling us, Arno?
Yeah, I mean, on the pitch. Yeah.
I mean, a Zizou would be pretty good for any team, wouldn't he, if they could just bring him back. But he's too busy rewriting managerial records.
Indeed.
Now. But, yeah, they're lacking that playmaker, I guess. Is that your feeling there?
Yeah, I mean, they've been playing very safe for half, and we can see the midfielder just passing left and right but not going in the middle.
And tell me this, Arno. I mean, being a Frenchman and obviously following the Le Bleu closely, what is the feeling on Didier Deschamps? Because I felt it was a missed opportunity when France held the European Championships 2 years ago. You were beaten in the final by Portugal. A lot of people surprised that Didier Deschamps kept his job. And I know that might be harsh because, of course, getting to a final, there is the lottery of finals. There is no guarantee that you win in a final. But given the fact that it was a home tournament, given the fact that France probably flattered a little bit to deceive, given the fact as well he is seen as very much a pragmatic, isn't he, coach, if he fails to deliver in this World Cup, is he gone after it?
It's a tough one. I think he's very close to the institution, so they know how, he knows how to play them and how to keep his job. Is he going to stay if we don't pass the first round? I don't think so. Further up, I mean, our expectation is semi-final, as I hear, so
That's the feeling in France.
Yeah,
semi-final,
yeah,
is minimum.
Well, that's what they
I think we've got a penalty here. Sorry, Arno, I'll break away here. We're going to keep a close eye on this one, but we've got a penalty, and it's gone the way of Australia. My goodness, I'm not quite sure what happened there. Mark Archer's telling me it was a handball. Samuel Umtiti, the big central defender for France, plays his club football for Barcelona. It is he that looks absolutely crestfallen, so he is. He's arguing, he's remonstrating with the referee. We're going to watch a replay of this one. A shake of the head there would suggest that he's made an error. Oh, my goodness, what is he doing? What is he doing? He misjudged the flight of the ball. The hand is up, and it does brush the hand of Samuel Umtiti. My goodness, Australia with a chance to get back on level terms.
And two of the faintest touches. The touch on Griezmann was the faintest. That was the faintest glancing blow across the hand of Samuel Umtiti, but it definitely touched his hand. What his hand was doing up there, outstretched and above his head, I'm not entirely sure, as the ball was whipped over. But I think it's the Australian Chris McCarty here who's got a chance to put Australia on level terms. It is Jedinak.
It is.
Sporting a beard that is even better than your one, Chris.
Cheers.
He's got a chance to beat Hugo Lloris here from 12 yards.
Yeah, it's Crystal Palace versus... It's not Crystal Palace. He plays for Aston Villa these days, is Millie Jedinak. Aston Villa versus Tottenham then. Millie Jedinak, it's 1-1. And it's a goal for Australia. France won then, Australia won. 61 minutes on the clock. Thus far, it's a tale of two highly contentious penalties. Certainly the first one, the second one, no doubt in my mind, that was a penalty for the Socceroos. They have levelled things up. Game on in this opening match. And Arno, I'm looking at you there. You look frustrated. You look crestfallen, a little like Samuel Umtiti.
As you say, game on. They have 30 minutes to finish this. They got to play.
Listen, I want to throw this one to Chris McCarty, and he won't enjoy it, but I'm going to throw it anyway. I read a little comment that Paul Pogba, as much as that maverick style of his embodies the frustrations that you've been feeling watching your Manchester United play all season, is it a similar feeling for France and a similar type of failure to make an impression on the game? You
Absolutely.
Look to him as this physical presence that he's actually going to start bossing things like a Patrick Vieira would have done, and he just hasn't looked in the game at all. He's been a peripheral figure, as he so often is for Manchester United, and as a result France seem fragmented. They don't seem, well, we watched Spain yesterday, cohesive, passing the ball around for fun, really a unit, a team unit, and France just don't look like they've got that. at the moment in this first 62 minutes or so.
He's a show pony. He's a show pony for his club. He's a show pony for his nation, Robbie. And I've been accused in the past of being rather harsh on Paul Pogba. But when you spend the sums of money that you do, and there'll be those out there that say, well, it's not Paul Pogba's fault that Manchester United spent all that money on him. For me, he looks at times like a Rolls Royce, but he's not someone that is going to grab a game. A Patrick Vieira of old, you look at Luka Modric for me in that Champions League final. He bent that game too as well. He dominated the centre of the park. I don't see that enough from Paul Pogba. And again, and Arno will know better, but I do know an awful lot of people over in France. There has been a lot of column inches dedicated to Paul Pogba in the lead up to this FIFA World Cup, asking the question whether he should be left on the bench, because time and time again he is not producing what we all expected. And I think we've got to maybe tamper our expectations on Paul Pogba. Maybe, just maybe, he isn't capable of what we all thought he was, and that was taking a game and bending it too as well. And by what I mean by that is literally getting on the ball and making yourself unplayable. I look back a few years ago at what Yaya Toure did for a full season for Manchester City in the Premier League. He was the dominant midfielder. He was the best player in the Premier League that season that they won the league. Paul Pogba has shown flashes only. And again today, he is just an absolute show pony that needs better players around him to make him look good.
If you're Germany, are you picking Paul Pogba?
No. No, you're not.
It is interesting.
You've got Sami Khedira, you've got Toni Kroos, you've got Ilkay
Gundogan.
No, but
I mean, okay, all right, forgetting the players that Germany have had, that we saw them ruthlessly leave Leroy Sané behind. Are France pandering to Pogba? I think that's probably the question I'm trying to ask.
Are they pandering to him? Well, I don't see him on the training ground, Rob. And I would imagine in training, he's the kind of player that probably produces moments where you think, oh my goodness gracious me, he's just done that. You know, he's one of those boys that he's technically, for a 6'3", he's technically incredible. He's phenomenal. But my problem with him is you watch him saunter around. I've said this time and time again. Out of possession, I question him. I don't think he's got the discipline. You know what? More than that, I don't think he's got the heart out of possession. I just don't see him putting it in. And that's my biggest issue. And watching him again today, I've not seen anything from him today that makes me think, and this is harsh, it's 1-1. I'm not laying the blame at the feet of Paul Pogba. All I'm saying is, once again, he's kept things neat and tidy, but he's not really grabbing the game.
Let's ask Arno for the French perspective. You read a lot of French press, Arno. Do the French journalists give Paul Pogba a hard time? Are they putting a lot of burden and expectation on his shoulders in this World Cup?
Yeah, a lot of pressure, that's for sure. But he's a midfielder, and he still touch 100 balls a game and run his, you know, 12, 15 kilometres a game. So I think he deserves to respect that he's a great player.
It's like that season he had at Juventus has really defined the potential, I guess, that everyone felt that he had, and he just has not emulated and lived up to that.
In a very good team, what I would say there, in a very good dominant team in Italy with Andrea Pirlo and Arturo Vidal alongside him, they made it easier for him. That's all I'd say. I look at Paul and I think he is, you know where he would do well? PSG. Because he'd get away with the flips and the tricks and all the nonsense that he produces, and there's no real team to push them hard. That's where Paul Pogba would do well. He did well at Juventus in not a substandard league. Serie A is very strong. It's not a Premier League. It's not a La Liga. And he did well in a dominant team. So if you're asking me where does Paul Pogba do well, send him back to France. He would do well for PSG.
There we go. That is the voice of a frustrated Manchester United fan commenting on Paul Pogba. But there's no doubt whatsoever that he has failed to make much of an impression on this game thus far. As you'd expect, France dominating the majority of the possession, 56% to Australia's 44. But the game is very much in the balance as we head into the final 25 minutes or so. 1-1, two penalties, two controversial penalties, two foolish ones, soft ones to give away, and it is Australia 1, France 1 with 66 minutes on the clock.
I just want to get, and as we watch this, Kylian Mbappe almost sent clear by a poor pass back from Australia. Let us get an update though on, well, Australian, but of the other variety, because Australia taking on Ireland down in Melbourne, is it, in the second test?
Yeah, second test match, of course. Australia had a fine victory last week, 18 points tonight against Ireland. Joe Smith made 8 changes back for Ireland this week. He's brought back the likes of Johnny Sexton, Kian Healy and Tag Furlong to strengthen that team. And it's Ireland leading into the second half at the moment. No points in the second half. It's the halftime score. Ireland 16, Australia 14. 54 minutes gone in that match. I'll give you also an update from Cardiff. There's one-day international cricket taking place. England taking on Australia in the second ODI. Second wicket has fallen for England. It's Alex Hales who has been dismissed for 26. England have currently scored 124 for 2 after 20 of their 50 overs. So they're going at 6 and over. Run rate's good. Joe Root, 5 not out. Jason Roy's just brought up his half century. He's 51, not out. England, 124 for two.
Just sticking on the rugby very shortly, if we can, Mark Archer. New Zealand, your All Blacks, your beloved All Blacks, taking on France a little earlier today. Arno, you might want to cover your ears for this one. All Blacks winning comfortably in the end, I guess, but France down to 14 men for the majority of the match?
Yeah, it wasn't a great match, to be honest. There was an early red card to the French fullback, Benjamin Fall. He ruined the match. It's a fair spectacle. The ref did it. It was a high ball challenge against Bowden Barrett. The Frenchman mistimed his challenge. Boda came down on the back of his neck, and the referee was really left with little decision but to give a red card after 11 minutes, which really changed the game. The All Blacks went on to win against a pretty gutsy 14-man French team, 26 points to 13. So that wraps the series up 2-0. Worth just probably even talking about just the quick highlights of that match. There wasn't much to speak about, but it was the All Blacks victorious against that 14-man French team, 26 points to 13. Here's a quick highlight summary.
Now Beru, who hasn't put a foot wrong so far.
Now that's big trouble.
That is big trouble, you're right.
Yeah, no, unfortunately I mentioned it before.
Luani with his pace, chased down, but he got it to Leonard Brown. Now they're lining up. Leonard Brown, he's got Jordy Barrett.
The All Blacks saw an opportunity to swing it wide. First of all it was Jordy Barrett.
Yeah, that is victory then for the All Blacks, 26 points to 13 over the French. And you were mentioning there the sending off of Benjamin Fall, and he really was the fall guy, pardon the pun there, for the French earlier on. But I watched this one, Arch. I saw bits and pieces of it. What was some suggestion in the highlight that Leonard Brown actually brushed him in, Benjamin, into Bowden Barrett? A little harsh, would have a yellow card not sufficed?
Yellow card could have been the right call, but the referee did look against the big screen. They made the decision that in the end the Frenchman was responsible for the safety of Bowden Barrett, who didn't return to the match. He had to go off with concussion test. He didn't return, and it was a fair blow. It looked probably a bit worse than it was, but unfortunately the Australian referee, by the letter of the law, had to banish the red card. And sometimes you look at mitigating circumstances. There was a lot of talk during the week about the challenge that put the French player in hospital. Mitigating circumstances again of that challenge in rugby. It's a contact sport. It's very tough sometimes in the dynamic situations, and it really ruined the match as a spectacle after 11 minutes. So you do feel for the French to that degree. It was a gutsy performance by them. The All Blacks, you would have thought, would have run away with the match. French hung in there, got their rewards at the end, and look, the final score 26-13. You know, it was a bit of a nothing match after the red card, but the All Blacks will take it 2-0 up, and they'll go to that third test match next weekend.
Yeah, they certainly will. The All Blacks, they can do no wrong. That victory down in Wellington. The third match is it back in Auckland?
I think it's under the roof down in Dunedin.
Dunedin.
Third test match. Okay, exactly.
Okay, that's next Saturday. When we come back, though, what we'll do is we'll put you in the picture. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on in the opening game of day three. And what we've also got to do when we come back, well, we've got to look back on the opening 2 days of this FIFA World Cup. One man, yet again, stealing all of the headlines. Yes, you've guessed it. Cristiano Ronaldo, a hat-trick for the Portuguese superstar last night. We'll look back on what has been an eventful couple of days when we come back.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
Welcome back down here at Barasti. It is day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. We're currently watching France against Australia. It is myself, Chris McCarty, joined by Robbie Greenfield and Mark Archer. And Robbie Greenfield can put us in the picture with exactly what is going on. 74 minutes on the clock over there in Kazan. It's France v Oz.
Still France 1, Australia 1. Both teams, Chris, have made a brace of offensive changes. France have brought on a man they often rely on in the later stages of the game. Olivier Giroud has replaced Antoine Griezmann, the goal scorer for France from the penalty spot. Nabil Fekir of Lyon, that failed Liverpool transfer target, he's come on to replace Ousmane Dembele, who plays his club football for Barcelona. So France have made a shake-up, but so have Australia. Tommy Juric has replaced their lone frontman Andrew Nabu, and Jackson Irvine has replaced Tom Rogic. No sign of Tim Cahill yet, but Australia look well in control, at least of this parity that they've got in this game thus far. France still failing to create any real clear-cut chances, Chris. And right now, France 1, Australia 1. With 15 minutes to go, something is going to need to change for this to not end in a stalemate.
That is the football then. What of the rugby? It's Australia in the football, Australia in the rugby as well. They're taking on Ireland down in Melbourne. Mark Archer's got the latest.
Yeah, halfway through the second half now, 19 minutes to go to be precise in Melbourne's second test match. Ireland are taking on Australia, the Wallabies, after losing the first test match. Ireland have struck first with a try to their big prop forward, Tag Furlong, has gone busted his way over. It's been converted by Johnny Sexton for the first score of the second half. That extends the Irish lead to 23 points to 14. It's been a dominant display by Ireland. They've had 73% possession in the match, so they've been the dominant team, and that dominance of possession is also reflected on the scoreboard. So 20 minutes to go in Melbourne, Ireland 23, Australia 14.
Italy victorious over Japan earlier today as well, Arch.
Yeah, good win for Italy. It was their first win in 2018 in a rugby union match. They defeated Japan in Kobe 25 points to 22. Earlier we talked about the win by the All Blacks, and of course all eyes focused on Bloemfontein at 7 o'clock. Eddie Jones on a five-match losing streak, trying to change his fortunes around, taking on South Africa at the altitude in Bloemfontein. Is going to be an interesting match. That it's a must-win match, you would have thought, for Eddie Jones and England. 7 o'clock kickoff in that match, and then there's a late kickoff down in Argentina where the hosts will take on Wales. It's the Rugby Union news for today, Chris.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Blaz Matuidi, the Juventus midfielder. He looks to be coming on for France here as they look to try and wrestle victory from the jaws of a draw here. It currently is France 1, Australia 1. But listen, boys, we'll peel ourselves away and we will keep an eye on this opening match. But we've got to look back on what has been a very eventful couple of days over in Russia. Robbie Greenfield, you said to me on the drive down here that you can't recall the last time a World Cup started with such a bang. 5-0 on the opening night, Russia, the hosts, beating Saudi Arabia. We then had two late goals yesterday, and then really the game of the tournament. You've gone out there on a limb to say you don't expect there to be a better game than the one we were treated to last night. Spain 3, Portugal 3.
Oh, incredible, wasn't it? It had everything. It had soft goals, it had world-class goals, it had a team that... You won't see a better team in possession than Spain. I'll go out there and say that. We've yet to see Argentina. We've yet to see Brazil take to the field here in Russia. But frankly, they'll have to go some to look better, at least on the ball, than Spain do. I'm not saying for a second, although I have actually officially tipped Spain to win this tournament. I was forced to, well, consider a dramatic U-turn in our build-up to this World Cup, Chris, because it all started to unravel for the Spanish camp with the departure of Julian Lopetegui, Fernando Hierro taking charge on short notice. But a lot of people have been saying, a lot of observers have been saying, that this Spanish squad, so experienced as it is, it's already a well-oiled machine. You don't need to do much tweaking. I think there would have been a fairly thorough handover email sent from Julian Lopetegui to Fernando Hierro. I would have loved to have read that, by the way. Here's my notes, by the way, Gaffer. Right, over to you now. You take charge. But you've got the likes of Sergio Ramos, one of the true leaders at this World Cup. You've still got dazzling talents up front. You've still got the likes of Andres Iniesta. Isco was fantastic, wasn't he, last night as well. And then against Portugal, a man who just cannot be stopped. He is irrepressible. Cristiano Ronaldo. I cannot think of a single player in the history of football who's been able to bend a game to his will time and time and time again.
Messi.
Like Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm sorry, Chris. Cristiano Ronaldo, quite simply the best player on the planet right now. He really is, and you cannot deny that based on last night's performance. It was inevitable. That free kick from 25 yards, it carried an air of inevitability. And will we see a better strike this tournament? I'm not so sure. You'd have to go some. That goal by Nacho, though, on the volley for Spain, perhaps it's equal from a pure striking standpoint. It was a fantastic game of football, and the standard has been set, the stall has been set out. We will see what the little maestro in the Argentina shirt can do in a couple of hours' time.
But just when on the biggest stage in world sport, the biggest stage in world football, the biggest showman steps up and shows his class. A hat-trick against Spain. He plays his football in that league, in La Liga. And what a performance by Cristiano Ronaldo, just to announce himself and just to cement his ability.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Is that a goal? We'll break away if we can, because we have just seen France hit the crossbar, and it is a goal. It is a goal for France. It's France 2, Australia 1, and it's that man that I've been criticising, Paul Pogba, who pops up. He hasn't got this one. I think it will go down as an own goal. We're going to watch a replay of this, but the first time, Arno, and we've got Arno, a French fan, alongside us,
He's smiling again.
That France moved the ball quickly. You watch this replay, it's one and two touch stuff, it is an own goal. I am not giving Paul Pogba that one, Arno. It is an own goal from the defender. It's one of the band that's coming across to try and cover. He flicks it over the head of Matt Ryan. It is over the line. It is France 2, Australia 1. I'm looking at the replay here, so cruel on Australia. We've got to focus in on this one closely. Is that ball all over the line? Oi, 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 that looks close to me. But it is France 2, Australia 1. That is Didier Deschamps. He is celebrating on the sidelines. The French fans as well inside that stadium over in Kazan. Olivier Giroud, Nabil Fekir, Paul Pogba, Blaise Matuidi all celebrating with Paul Pogba. 58 minutes on the clock was when Antoine Griezmann gave them the lead from the penalty spot. Milly Jedinek then equalised 4 minutes later, also from the penalty spot. But into the final 10 minutes of this one, Paul Pogba has been awarded the goal. I'm sure the dubious goals panel will take that one away from him because it's not his goal.
You've got a thing in for Paul Pogba this afternoon, Chris McCarthy, but he has been awarded the goal. Arno, your reaction to that, you've got a smile on your face. It's not been a great performance this by France, but if they can hang on to this lead, it's job done. It's 3 points.
That's true. It's all about the win at this point. But yeah, Pogba stayed quite respectful. I agree. He didn't jump all over the place, so...
I think that was maybe a pointed...
A little sheepish,
yes, perhaps. The lack of celebration, perhaps a little sheepish in the fact that he knows it isn't his goal, and just perhaps, maybe just a muted celebration, given all the criticism that I and an awful lot of people have levelled against Paul Pogba over the course of the past 9 months or so. But 82 minutes on the clock now, it is France 2, Australia 1. Just to go back to last night's game, guys, and you made the point there that you think that there's no finer player right now on the planet.
Right now.
Cristiano Ronaldo. If Ronaldo is... Well, I saw someone tweet it, actually, and it was a very good point, this, that perhaps Ronaldo's the greatest finisher of all time and Messi's just the greatest footballer of all time. Would you concur?
Look, I think Messi's a greater footballer over the piece, but you just cannot argue with what Cristiano Ronaldo's been producing these last couple of years. It's just... every time he produces a new batch of insurmountable evidence.
On the biggest stages of all time.
On the biggest stages.
Is Messi
a
flat track?
Over and over again.
Don't say it, Arch.
Don't be facetious. Listen, I'm not trying to be contrarian by saying that Cristiano Ronaldo is the best in the world right now, but he is. If there was a world ranking in football, Cristiano Ronaldo would be world ranked number one. I don't think we could be arguing with that right now. Messi will probably go down as a greater player. I'm not suggesting for 1 second that he won't, but right now, Cristiano Ronaldo seems to be able to take a game in which his team is totally outclassed in possession, totally take a game and somehow find a way to salvage things for his side. He is basically a one-man band. Yes, Portugal have some good players, but up against Spain, they were outclassed on the ball, and Cristiano Ronaldo somehow drags them from the depths. And yes, okay, one was a penalty, which Chris doesn't believe was a penalty. The other was a bad mistake from David De Gea. Very uncharacteristic. We don't often see him make those. The third goal, though, when he needed to step up, and what was interesting was you could see there was a tweet that went out, and it was all focusing in on Ronaldo's facial expressions and his little pre-shot routine, if you like, before the World Cup. He hitched up his shorts to show these rippling thighs of his. Not sure why he chose to do that. Surprised the shirt didn't come off when he scored as well. But the sheer focus and the sheer confidence etched all over his face. He knew he was scoring that goal. And that's the thing. He writes his own destiny, Cristiano Ronaldo. It's quite phenomenal to watch it. It was inevitable.
And funnily enough, you watch David De Gea in goal. He's almost resigned that Ronaldo's going to score. David De Gea knows where he's going to put it. Ronaldo knows where he's going to put it, and he just can't do anything about it.
It was shades of Portsmouth, wasn't it? All those years ago in 2008 for Manchester United. It was as good a strike, Chris. It really was.
We talk about the biggest sporting stars in those big moments, the clutch moments. Michael Jordan, we've seen it time and time again do it. We've seen the likes of Michael Schumacher when he needed to produce a race, and Ronaldo did it. But it's important we balance it out. Lionel Messi, for goodness sake, scored a hat-trick against Bolivia to get Argentina to this World Cup. The very best players, and it's a moot point. One or two of you might think it's Ronaldo, the others might think it's Messi. I am of the belief that it is Lionel Messi. I still think he is the greater footballer, but again, it is a very good argument to have just who is the best finisher, because no doubt about it, Cristiano Ronaldo is an absolute goal machine. There's been a numerous number of tweets going out praising Cristiano Ronaldo as being the first player to score in 8 consecutive major tournaments, and I've got to bring you guys some knowledge of this, and well, it's worth a little debate, I think, on the show, because John Bennett, who is a very well-respected journalist for the BBC. And I think he made an interesting point here about how much or how little we pay attention or give respect to the African Cup of Nations, because he was pointing out that it's absolute nonsense. That Cristiano Ronaldo becomes the first player to score at 8 major international tournaments start. He says it's rightly not going down well in Ghana. Why? Asamoah Gyan has scored in 9 major tournaments, World Cups and African Cup of Nations from 2006 to 2013. Now, the African Cup of Nations is the equivalent of a European Championship, of a Copa America. That's doing a great disservice to the African Cup of Nations that tweet has gone viral.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it just goes to show the...
apathy?
I think the patronising mentality,
yes,
of the sort of the glitterati of European and South American football, that, you know, I think people think very narrowly, and they think that the only major tournaments that count are, well, the Euros and the World Cup, and maybe, you know, I'm not surprised that tweet has gone viral, and Asamoah Gyan needs some credit as well, but. Then again, don't take
it. He's a PR manager.
No, yes, he does.
You need someone to push that stat out a lot more for him. I've done just that. I've retweeted it. But I mean,
Look, if we accept things, I think Copa Libertadores, Euros, and the World Cup.
Copa America.
Those would be the three that have the best quality of teams and the best quality of players. But major international tournaments.
Our major international tournaments.
They
one thing
are.
Or three things that are not in question. Cristiano Ronaldo, oldest player to score a World Cup hat-trick. Second highest goal scorer ever for any country now with that hat-trick last night. And the fourth player to score in 4 World Cup finals. The man is a machine. Whether you think he's the best or not, there is no question. You've got to give the man great respect. He has crafted and refined the art of scoring a goal. He has made it an art form, and he's an absolute machine. That was Cristiano Ronaldo last night.
Question for you, Chris. Is this his last World Cup?
Probably not, in all honesty. I mean, what is he? 33.
Three.
He turns 34 in November or March. I think it's November. He's 33 years of age. No, the way that he looks after himself, if his hunger, and I expect it will, stand up to the test of time. I've no doubt that Cristiano Ronaldo in 4 years' time at 37 will still be pulling on a Portugal shirt, because he wants records, he wants more goals. You know, he lives, it seems, off of trophies, personal accolades and scoring goals.
And all this pouting that he does, all this manoeuvring politically with his future and his threats to leave Real Madrid, he's actually exposed himself as very much in their hands. They have the cards, because we've talked about it. Where on earth can Ronaldo go where he will have the platform to allow him to pursue the goals that he is utterly obsessed with pursuing? He can't demur and say that he'd be happy to go over to the US and continue to earn bucket loads of money over there playing in Major League Soccer, or playing over in China, where no doubt he'd be the best paid player on the planet, but he wouldn't be picking up any further Ballon d'Ors. He'd leave the door open for Lionel Messi to add a few more of those into his cabinet. And Ronaldo, make no mistake about it, he wants to end his career crushing Lionel Messi.
Absolutely.
In personal accolades. That is what is driving him, and that is what is driving this insatiable quest to just star in every game. He needs to be the star. It's not so much about Real Madrid or not so much about Portugal. We saw how incredibly frustrated he was when he didn't get on the score sheet in that Champions League final. He needs to be the individual star as well as the team star. And we're seeing pandemonium erupt here, because I'm not sure what was going on there.
Yeah, France
had an attack. You
fantastic.
Were watching, Chris.
I was keeping an eye on it. I've got to say, the best player on the park for me, for France, and it'd be great to get Arnaud's thoughts, N'Golo Kanté, once again showing why he is the most destructive defensive midfielder in world football. The work that he gets through, what he's improved on is his distribution. We've just seen him there. He won the ball back from Jackson Irvine, a former Celtic Ross County midfielder is Jackson Irvine as well, now playing his club football down in England with Hull City. He robbed them of that, and then he starts an attack. He threads a lovely through ball to Kylian Mbappe. He scampers clear. Matthew Ryan, the Aussie keeper, comes out to close the angle. Mbappe gets it on over to Nabil Fekir. He lays it off to Paul Pogba, but again, lackadaisical from Paul Pogba. No awareness of what's around him, and then the danger comes to absolutely nothing. We're into the final stages then of this opening game of day 3. It is France 2, Australia 1. It does look as if they are going to eke out the 3 points before then. They've got ties with Denmark and Peru to see out this Group C, and breathless stuff. It really, really is.
And Chris, it's not just Arno who's holding his breath at the moment, because Farah the Falcon has a lot of reputation at stake on this one as well. I think we can probably reveal that I don't want to... Actually, no, I'm not going to risk jinxing Farah. She doesn't need me to jinx her. She's got a tough enough task on her own as it is, trying to predict all 64 matches of this FIFA World Cup. But I can tell you, if you are interested in following the progress of our mystic bird of prey, that she's off to a very fine start. She was denied only by that wondrous strike from Cristiano Ronaldo from going 4 from 4, Chris.
She certainly has, yes. Ronaldo takes the very best to stop Farah the Falcon in her tracks, but she has backed...
That's the narrative we're clinging to, at least.
Yeah, at least that is. But she was right in the first game. She backed Russia to win. She then backed... It was Uruguay, that late winner from Jose Jimenez to beat Egypt. She then backed Iran. She went against the grain and backed Iran. They got that late 95th minute winner to beat Morocco. She backed then Spain, and they were denied by Cristiano Ronaldo last night. I will not reveal who she backed in this one. Head on to our website or head on to our YouTube channel, Dubai iSport. All of the first 32 games are uploaded there, and you can keep a very close eye on exactly what she's doing prediction-wise.
Now, we spoke about this before going live on air, Chris, the fact that this was a stalemate, 3-3 between Spain and Portugal. Does this leave the door open for Iran to somehow find their way at the expense of either Spain or Portugal into the last 16?
If they beat one of them, yes. Because of that draw, if Iran, and it's easier said than done, of course, if Iran can beat Portugal, if Iran can beat Spain, then they book their place into the last 16. And I said it to you on the way down, Iran are very difficult to break down. 14 clean sheets from their 18 qualifying matches, a clean sheet against Morocco as well. Carlos Queiroz, arguably the finest manager at setting up a defensive unit, and I include Jose Mourinho in all of that. Carlos Queiroz has his teams well drilled, and it's not going to be easy for Portugal and Spain, and I said it to you, and I'm maybe going out on a whim here, it wouldn't surprise me if Iran gets something from Portugal. Carlos Queiroz, he born in Mozambique, but a Portuguese, a man that's coached his national team before, knows those players very well. I expect him to have a plan for Portugal, and as I say, it wouldn't surprise me if Iran were to take something from that match.
And if Iran, say, draw with Portugal, that means that the game rests almost on goal difference.
It does. Indeed it does. And you'd expect Portugal to go out against Morocco and try and put together a performance and hope that they can score the goals that can help them get into that last 16. I'm not for one second saying, and I've got to be careful here, I don't expect Portugal to be heading home early, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were indeed doing so. 2 minutes into injury time here. We've got five of the allotted 5 minutes. Here it is, France against Australia. When we come back, we will have a full-time result from you in this matchup. Mark Archer's keeping an eye on the rugby, he's keeping an eye on the cricket, and Robbie Greenfield, 50 minutes in, you've not even mentioned the golf.
Hey, listen, I'm too worried about incurring your wrath, Chris McCarty, to mention the golf. I know you don't want to talk about that, but we will be speaking about that as we build up to Argentina-Iceland. That is the second of four matches on today. 5 p.m. kickoff. What a tantalising prospect that is. The quarterfinalists at the Euro 2016, a hero story in their own right, taking on Chris's idea of the greatest player who's ever lived, Lionel Messi and Argentina. Can they get their act together in time to mount a challenge for this FIFA World Cup? We're going to find out at 5 o'clock. More sport when we come back.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Yeah, the game is always on down here at Barasti. Day 3 of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. The full-time whistle has just blown on the opening match of the day over in Kazan. Robbie Greenfield's got the deets.
Yeah, it has finished France 2, Australia 1. Paul Pogba is still down as the goal scorer of that fortuitous second goal. It was Antoine Griezmann who gave France the lead from the penalty spot. Mile Jedinak equalised with an equally soft penalty to give away from a French perspective to make it 1-1. And then in the 80th minute, Paul Pogba burst through. It was a looped ball that cannoned off a defender and over the goalkeeper, Ryan, and in off the underside of the crossbar, Chris McCarty. And France, as sketchy as they've looked at times, N'Golo Kante has once again produced an incredibly efficient performance in the middle of the park. Paul Pogba, well, he's been missing in action for the majority of that game. He did produce the decisive moment. At least that's what the score sheet says. It is France 2, Australia 1. France will look to improve and build on this performance because they're not looking like potential World Cup champions as things stand. But that being said, it was a sticky opening day fixture and they got through it nonetheless. Yeah. 3 points to France. They topped the group. Denmark and Peru play later on this afternoon, Chris McCarty, but it's a flawless start for France, and I've got to tell you as well, Farah the Falcon is now 4 from 5.
Yeah, she is. Farah the Falcon backed France to win, so she is 4 from 5, and only Cristiano Ronaldo has denied her a clean sweep at the start of this FIFA World Cup. I'm not sure whose idea it was, but yes, Farah the Falcon, our little intrepid mystic.
Look into the mirror, my friend.
Is predicting all 64 matches, and she's started with a bang. So that is the football. We'll get the thoughts of a French fan on France's opening win over the Oz in just a moment or two. Before we do that, though, let's tell you how Oz are getting on in the rugby. They're taking on Ireland down in Melbourne. Mark Archer's got the details.
Yeah, literally at full time in this match, it looks as though Ireland will do enough to win the match. Australia have just scored, which looks like a consolation try to Tupo with 2 minutes remaining. The score in the final minute of the match in Melbourne, it looks like Ireland are going to pip it here, 26 points to 21. So can Ireland hold on for the final 60 seconds? It means they'll get a victory, square the series up at one apiece, and they'll go to Sydney with a series on the line next week. I'll bring you the full-time score in less than the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, we will definitely do that. Ireland looking to level up. They were disappointing, weren't they, Arch, last week? We were down here watching Ireland, and as good as Australia were in that final 20 minutes or so, I guess a bit of a wake-up call for an Irish team that an awful lot of rugby observers, Mark Archer, are tipping to push your boys all the way in 14 months' time.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, though, Joe Smith made a lot of changes to that team last week. He rested the likes of Johnny Sexton after an arduous season with Leinster and with Ireland. He also put on the bench the likes of Kian Healy, Tag Furlong. He was doing a bit of the old rotation. He was giving some players some experience. They lost that first test match to Australia, 18 points to 9, but Ireland have been done what they do best today. They've been efficient. They've dominated in the forward pack. They had 77% possession halfway through the second half, which meant they turned it into points, and it looks like they're going to strangle Australia, particularly in the forwards. Line-outs, scrums, mauls. If they can keep the turnovers away from Hooper and Pocock, which is where Australia is so good as jackals around the gain line, then they get the dominance. It looks like Ireland are going to get their win today, but we'll bring the full-time score in the next minute or so when we get it in from Melbourne.
Whilst we wait for that full-time result to come in, Robbie Greenfield, there's a very, relieved French fan alongside us, and Arnaud has been watching that match, a little pensive, the France-Australia opening game of Day 3 of the FIFA World Cup, and he's a happy man.
Arnaud, your thoughts, your reaction to that game, has it filled you with dread or optimism or a little bit of both?
Well, it's a win, so we got to take that. You could see that Spain didn't start very well a few World Cup ago, and first game is always hard, so you got to put that in perspective. I wish them a better game next time, but yeah, we see that they all come to the Matuidi and Giroud, and they're all good group, more than the speed that they thought that Dembele and... who else came out?
Dembele and
Fekir.
Griezmann.
And Griezmann. So, yeah.
It is an interesting point what you say there, Arnaud, and it's maybe been forgotten by a few observers, perhaps even us included at times, that France, unlike other nations, and I think Germany certainly do with Mario Gomez, but France have a plan B. Because when their technical players, that they're speed merchants, if a Dembele and Mbappe and a Griezmann are not working, and on paper, they, for me, are the best front three that you've got. But if they're not working, he can call upon Nabil Fekir, who's a lot stockier, a lot stronger of a physical presence. Olivier Giroud, who offers you that option of going a little bit more direct. Other than Germany, if you think Brazil don't really have it, with Firmino coming on for Jesus, Spain, I guess, Costa is your big target man. But take Costa out of it, they've not got a real plan B. So it is fascinating that. And Didier Deschamps is a big fan of Olivier Giroud.
But funnily, they started with plan B. The speed, the game is usually to be a bit stronger with Giroud and Matuidi, the old guys who've done already few tournaments, and putting them on the bench was quite of a bet, and they thought, let's play speed against muscles, and in the end they went back to muscle, but they were faster with those muscles. So
it is quite incredible entrusting the World Cup to a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old up front. It is amazing the faith they've placed in Dembele and Mbappe. As precocious as those two players are, it is an awful lot to shoulder and a lot to carry on your back to try and win the tournament for your country.
It is, and we always look at them because they're in the forefront, but you look at the two backs, left and right, they're also 22, and they have 5-6 caps, and they play well tonight, but meant today, so yeah, the whole team is young.
We're talking about a country, Arno, who've had success. 20 years ago, you won the World Cup. In 2006, you reached the final. Is the country at large, is France expecting this team of individuals to be there at the latter stage of this tournament? You mentioned semi-finals. How optimistic is the feeling in France that this team could win it?
Well, the thing is, when you make it once, you've always believed that it can happen again, right? So it's the 20 years birthday of the 98 win. So obviously we feel like with all the press and those people on the pitch, we have a chance. I mean, I heard somewhere that they were altogether the most valuable team of the tournament in billions.
Doesn't so, surprise me.
At the end of the day, yes, you took them individually. They rank in the top three of every position they have. And even the B team, so on the paper. But where's the number 10?
Yeah, that's it. That's the question you've been asking. No Zizou, I guess Nabil Fekir, a Thomas Lemar. They're the two options at number 10. But in fairness to both of them, as good as they are, and I'm a fan of both, they're no Zinedine Zidane. They're not a talisman that you can build a team around. And I guess in those big games, in the games if they do come up against a Spain or a Germany, that is where that quality in the final third, it's the difference between a defeat or victory.
True. It's just a lot of videos are going to go, I think.
Indeed. Listen, that is the voice of Arnaud. It's just gone 4 o'clock. A French fan, very happy French fan as well. An awful lot more football over the course of the next month. You've got to settle in. That is 5 down, 59 to go. And I will repeat, 5 down, 59 to go.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.